Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joy 94.9, when only the best will do.
When only the best will do indeed. Which is tonight with Lauren and Jane on Transmission Time. Life from a transgender perspective for the next hour or so. Break My Stride, Jane, back in the 90s.
Yes, great variety.
Unique too, another one-hit wonder. Life from something of a transgender perspective, certainly this evening, when we'll be interviewing Ian Muchamore and Lauren Hare, who identified, do we dare call it the transsexual gene?
Well, we can see what they have to say about it later
a
on.
A transsexual gene? That's
I think
really
that might
small,
be better.
That's a gene that doesn't have a fly. A transsexual gene. Nonetheless, how was your week?
Fairly
you whispered to me that you've been doing, your fireworks went off. Was that
yes.
because you're finally not a virgin anymore? Or
no.
What?
No,
where did you
Lauren.
Get fireworks?
We had a fireworks demonstration on, I think it's the house opposite us. That went for about 5 or 10 minutes last night, and they do this every year. They have a party on Cup Eve, and they always
that's
have
that
a
big house with a spire across from the park bench that you sleep on. Is that what
yeah,
you're talking
about? Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, on St Kilda Road?
No, I'm not telling you where it is.
Oh, okay.
And they always have this lovely fireworks exhibition. Must cost them a small arm and a leg, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, private party. Yeah, it's all very nice.
Just there for you?
Well, I was able to see it, yes.
And it was because of Melbourne Cup?
I think so. Well, they hold it every year.
Did you go today?
No.
We really haven't had much of a chance to talk. You didn't go today?
No.
There's normally quite a few trans girls there and Oaks Day.
Especially Oaks Day. I think they tend to go more on Thursday than they do on Cup Day.
If there were any trans women, girls or trans boys there today at the Cup, we'd appreciate your information. 0427JOY949, was it a good day? I think the weather was nice, but we'd be interested to know how your day went, how you were reacted to out there, and whether everyone was nice to you, and whether you backed the winner, like Bart Cummings will have.
He's very lucky. He's a 12th Melbourne Cup under his belt. Yeah, good record.
Looks like he's got a whole lot of pizzas under his belt as well. And I saw him in the parade. I can't remember the name of the race winner, but as I walked through town there this evening, there was a whole lot of girls walking around in bare feet. I wonder if bare feet was the go today.
No, I think it's sore feet
they
exercise.
Were carrying, there were boys carrying their shoes. So
oh, that was very
perhaps
nice.
Perhaps it was just, yes, they had a long day at the office, I think. It's wonderful. Nonetheless, and you were interviewed, you've been a multimedia megastar this week.
Yes, basically on the other side of the desk being interviewed on Allegro Non Troppo of a Sunday at noon.
With Sunday morning with Adam Dobbs. Okay. This was regarding what? Your long media career?
No, about my transition. But it was mainly looking at it from my partner's point of view and how she felt and the issues around it.
They've been doing quite a bit on trans issues, haven't they?
I'm
starting to wonder about Adam. What's going on there?
It's just an interesting topic.
You're well and truly out now, I guess.
I've been out for quite a while.
Well, I gathered that, but once Adam's done you, I think pretty much that's it, really. Or was that where the fireworks came in?
No, they were a couple of days later.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had a very quiet week. I've got absolutely nothing to report.
Stay at home, are you?
Well, not really. No, I've been out a bit, been having some dinners and stuff, but you know, there were no fireworks or media interviews in my life, I'm happy to say.
You were probably sitting in a cafe somewhere with a laptop working away.
I do that occasionally. But anyway, we'll be talking to Ian and Lauren from Prince Henry's Institute in just a moment. Transmission Time with Jane and Lauren. Transmission Time with Jane and Lauren. Now, Jane, we have a couple of fabulous, interesting guests in the studio, and one might suggest that as far as transgender people are concerned, they may well have made the discovery of the century. And well, it's very early in the century too.
That's true. Well, last week there was a press release from Prince Henry's Institute that announced that a link had been found between male to female transsexuals and an abnormality in one particular gene. And tonight we have with us Ian Muchamore and Lauren Hare from the Prince Henry's Institute, who are members of the research team that made this important discovery. Ian heads up the Institute's Science Communication Unit, and Lauren is the first author on the paper that has reported these findings. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much, Jane and Lauren.
First of all, and probably before we start, could you give us a little bit of a background to the Prince Henry's Institute?
Well, quite a lot of Melburnians remember the Prince Henry's Hospital, which used to be in St Kilda Road.
Yes.
And in the late 1980s, I think it was, the hospital, along with the Queen Victoria Hospital, moved out to what is now the Monash Medical Centre. Mm-hmm. And Prince Henry's Institute had been a medical research institute out at Prince Henry's Hospital on St Kilda Road since 1960. And when that move happened in the late 1980s, we became Prince Henry's Institute.
Okay.
And so that's, often there's some confusion what happened to Prince Henry's Hospital.
Your bit.
We're the last bit of it. We're what's left of it, yes. The history in the, almost 50 years is that we've almost through all of that time had an interest in endocrinology and hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really partly what brought us into this particular study. It didn't come out of the blue, is that most of our research in endocrinology at the current time looks at things like breast cancer, ovarian cancer, reproductive biology, fertility, contraception,
right.
Obesity, things like that, but often looking at the role of hormones in these different important conditions.
Okay. So what was your background that got you into this position in the first place?
Oh, well, my background is actually I'm a geneticist by training, although I wasn't actually a researcher who directly worked on this particular project. But I was a geneticist many years ago, and then I moved into the communications area. You can obviously tell that I'm a POM. And I worked at a period in the UK during the Human Genome Project, which is often described as decoding the book of life.
Yes.
And I was involved in a number of education projects there, trying to stimulate public debate and discussion and to make sure that people understood what was happening in the science and that people clearly had trust and understanding in how policy was developing and also that they understood what the science meant and also what the science didn't mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came over to Australia about 7 years ago and I've worked in a number of different areas, but again, mainly focused around education and genetics and policy. And I came to Prince Henry's just about a year ago.
Okay.
And I've been particularly involved there in promoting through the media and through other community education, broad research, and genetics is just a small part of the research which we do at Prince Henry, so it's quite interesting for me to do some things which are not genetics for a change. But I'm back on old turf now.
And Lauren, your sort of background?
Well, I've only just sort of come into the area. I was an undergraduate student at Monash University, and I did my degree, a double degree in arts and science.
Ooh.
And then
that sounds like hard work.
So now you're qualified to paint computers. Is that what happens when you do arts
pretty
and science?
Pretty much, yeah. Do whatever you want a little bit. But I did this research last year in the Human Molecular Genetics Lab at Prince Henry's, and that was my first year of research out of my undergraduate degree. So,
were you looking for this gene, or is this with your first experience? You just winged it, and look what we found! It's a new star.
My supervisor at Prince Henry's had an interest in this area long before I came along. I sort of just grabbed my attention after uni, so, and then I found a real interest, and we just sort of happened to go from there. So
did the genetic research come first, then the study, or was the study based? Was a genetic research study because someone said, look, let's get some blood?
Well, I think Vince, who is the head of the lab at Prince Henry's, had an interest in this area.
That's Professor Vincent Harley to the rest of us. But feel free to call him Vince. If you're listening, Vince, hi.
We're on first name basis,
okay,
obviously.
Of course.
No, he's had an interest in this area a long time, and probably since Henry... I always get it wrong.
Herbert Bauer.
And he's been collecting sort of blood and DNA samples for a little while, but this study sort of only followed a Swedish study which was published about, I think it's about 4 years ago, or 5 years ago now. So we based our research sort of on that genetic study and sort of just went from there. So with a larger group, obviously, so we had a lot more participants in our study compared to the Swedish study. So
okay.
What I might add is, as a lot of research studies are, this was a collaborative study. So this was a study in collaboration with the Monash Gender Dysphoria Clinic and also with some universities.
Yeah, Trudy Kennedy's referenced on the heading.
Yes, Trudy Kennedy is one of the authors, and we certainly couldn't have done this research without Trudy Kennedy and the Monash people there, and also some researchers at University of California at LA, and some of the samples, some of the DNA samples also came from there, but most of the samples actually were from Australia, and this is the largest genetic study of male to female transsexuals that's ever been conducted.
Mm.
And I think for such a tiny country, the involvement of the transsexual population is really quite amazing. It obviously shows there's a great interest in this type of research.
Well, the figures that I've seen over the years for male to female transsexuals, it's sort of like in the order of sort of 30,000 to one. But I noticed in your paper, Lauren, that you talk about it being sort of under 3,000.
Yeah, it sort of varies. There's lots of different papers which sort of publish different prevalence levels, and it's kind of a little bit confusing sometimes, so we sort of have to just do a range from about 1 in 3,000 up to some report up to 1 in 100,000, which I think is, you know, a little bit
on the high side.
A little bit high. So yeah, I think it's just dependent on country and culture, and it's
and definition as well, how you define transsexual or transgender as well.
So yeah, we haven't really given a definite prevalence level because we just don't know it.
Let's do a quick study. Okay, four of us in the studio. Two of you, I'd say we're at 50%.
Yeah. 1 in 2.
Easy, there you go. That clarifies things.
Yeah, easy, Dad. With the number of people that you've got, was it 129?
112.
Oh, sorry, 112.
Study, yeah.
And if you look at that as being a percentage of the population of Melbourne, which I take it most of your samples came from, we must have a very high percentage of transgender people here in Melbourne, because there would have been a lot of us that wouldn't have been invited into the study.
No, well, obviously some of those are from LA as well, but I think the volunteers that participated came from Victoria, and I think there were a couple that came from Tasmania and things like that who visited Trudy and participated as well. Okay. So
was it nopped in? Was it here's some blood, or it was, Trudy just hoarding blood in the back room?
No, it was all voluntary. So
Okay, so people knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were participating in. So
and the samples that came from California, was it like transsexual Schwarzenegger, chuck that in the bin, transsexual?
One of the things that's important to do in a quality study, and I think that's one of the things, the questions that people need to ask is, you know, what's the quality of any genetic association study that you read about? And you read about genetic association studies all the time. One of the things I think that makes this a high quality study is this is the largest study that's ever been done of male to female transsexuals, but also you need a clear definition of what, and so the definition that we've used in this particular case has been the definition that's in the DSM-4,
yes.
which you'll probably be familiar with. So anyone that, any sample that came to us had to have gone through a process where they've been assessed by a gender clinic, or obviously if they'd already transitioned, then perhaps that wouldn't be required, but you've got to meet some strict criteria to actually then be able to do the proper study.
Okay. But of course, let me just jump. So a lot of that is self-identification, but does it require that the person had to have had surgery?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
No. So some of the people would have transitioned, some people wouldn't have transitioned. Many of the people, I believe, and Lauren can correct me if I'm wrong, may have been on hormones at the present time, but they would meet that fairly strict DSM-4 criteria to actually participate in this genetic study.
For many of our listeners, they won't know the criteria, so would you like to run very quickly through them?
I don't have them on me, but they have to have a clear sort of identification as obviously the opposite gender.
Yeah.
I think one of the conditions is that they don't have any physical sort of intersex conditions.
Characteristics
as well. That it imposes on their sort of social functioning as well. Mm-hmm. And I think there's one more which I'm forgetting, which is terrible of me, but...
No, we can't remember the DSM-4. Let me just try you, Jane. You've been around for 100 years. You give us the missing criteria from the DSM-4.
I would have to run through them all again, but I know there's... But basically, a strong association with opposite gender, no medical conditions such as schizophrenia, things like that, a persistence to live in the opposite gender. I'm only up to three as well. I
there
fail as
go.
Well.
There you go. So don't be
sorry.
Putting Lauren on
the covered,
spot.
We've covered most of them.
Yes. Yeah.
The important thing was that surgery wasn't required, so that wouldn't have influenced the study.
No, we did have post and pre-operative.
Yep.
So.
And hormonal influences on genes? Can the fact that they were on hormones have affected their genetic makeup?
No, not at all. Your genes are your genes. They don't change. So they don't change with hormone.
Genes
with
have been going from 12, 14, 16, 18. So they're certainly changing.
Not quite that size yet.
No, your genes
so your
can't
genes
be
are
influenced.
Set.
So your genes are set. So it's not going to be influenced by hormone levels. If there was going to be a hormone study, of course, then that would come into play, but not your genes. So
that's good to know. Okay.
It's basically in sort of starting off this project, how did you both get sort of involved in it?
Well, as I said, I sort of came across it after my undergraduate degree. I'd been lectured by Vincent Harley at Monash and had sort of spoken to him just about the area. I had a double degree in genetics and psychology, so I sort of was trying to combine my interests a little bit. So, and this study sort of stuck in my mind, and okay. I sort of wanted to get involved. So
when the opportunity came along, you said, me.
Yep, I jumped at it. So, and he was very happy that I did. So,
okay. And Ian?
Oh, I think for myself, I was speaking to Vince a few months ago, and I heard about this research, and you know, obviously it takes some time for a paper to be published, and the papers have to be peer-reviewed, so it has to go through a process where independent people look at it. And I said, you know, what an interesting study, and wouldn't it be great to get some coverage, but isn't it important for us to get the right messages out?
Yes.
And that's really where I was quite passionate, and I felt that we had to do this in the right fashion. And we've really treated this as a science and health story, mm-hmm. and concentrated on getting the science and health journalists to cover this in hopefully a balanced fashion.
Is it time that we explained what the hell you found?
Yes, I think
so. We've been going about Lauren. 10 minutes and I'm thinking, no one's actually explained what it was, what this discovery is.
Well, we looked at, there's variations in all genes, so there's longer bits and shorter bits.
I've been working with an abnormality for 9.5 years now.
So we looked at three genes, but in one particular, which is the androgen receptor, there's a certain sort of repeat in it, and you can have a longer version of this, you can have a shorter version. So it sort of varies across everyone, the entire population. And we compared this particular repeat length in male to female transsexuals and just a general population of males. And we found that this repeat tended to be longer. It's a weak association, but it is a significant association that male to female transsexuals had a longer version of this particular repeat in this gene. So
then the general community, then like a sample case of normal.
Yeah.
Let's not use that word.
No, just non-transsexual males,
yes.
I guess you would say.
Okay.
So then we're trying to think of how this may be influencing. We don't know exactly the biology of what this might be doing, but we're sort of hypothesizing or sort of thinking that it may affect the testosterone action during development in the brain and the masculinization of the brain. So whether they're being under-masculinized or over-feminized, we're not 100% sure.
It's a shocking word, that masculine.
Isn't it?
It's, because I think we've discussed in the past on this show, Jane, that that up to about 6 weeks in the womb, we're all pretty much no sex or female or something, aren't we? And then the androgens come in
and
masculinize the boys.
Yep, and other hormones then start the feminization. Well, you're becoming a girl, and so we all sort of start neutral and then go either way, sort of thing. So,
and this androgen receptor, androgen is another word for testosterone, or a testosterone is a type of androgen.
Testosterone is a type of androgen.
So an androgen receptor is something that perhaps affects the way that your body receives and deals with testosterone.
Deals with the signalling of testosterone, so it sort of like grabs hold of it and sends it signals to the other parts of the body, the brain, whether it be the brain, you know, the rest of the body.
So like for someone that plays centre full forward for Carlton, for instance, it makes you do wheeze outside and makes you go nuts.
Obviously,
Okay, but this... We have longer ones or shorter ones?
The male to female transsexual population tended to have longer ones. So whether we think that might have affect less testosterone action. So
testosterone had less of an effect.
Yeah, wasn't,
probably
wasn't working as well. That's what we're hypothesising, but we haven't measured that for sure. So, but as I say, this not all male to female transsexuals have a longer version, and not all non-transsexual males have a shorter version, so it does vary in the general population, and it will vary in the transsexual population as well.
Because in genetics, there's a whole lot of things interacting.
Absolutely,
isn't there?
Absolutely.
Like, we're not exactly sure what. Like someone found the intersex gene some years ago, didn't they? They say they found a gene that created an intersex condition, but they weren't sure if that was the gene or a gene on a string or something that made it all work together.
Yeah, no. There's several intersex genes, and they're definitely most likely going to be several genes involved in transsexualism. So it's definitely not the transsexual gene, but we think it's definitely involved. So
you think it's definitely a pointer. And from there, can you find all of its relatives? Can you track back up the string and go, oh, look, it's reacting with these other things?
Yeah, there's other genes involved in the same sort of pathway, and we are interested in looking at those. So future research may look at different genes in the similar pathways, but so we looked at three that are sort of all interlinked and found an association with one, so it would definitely be interesting to look at others.
Wonderful. We need to just cut this short for a second and have play a couple of messages from our sponsors. If anyone who's listening has a question for Lauren or Ian, what are our contact details? Jane, I never pay attention.
you don't, do you?
0427... you can SMS to
0427JOY949. Of course, there's always the telephone, 9699 2949,
or if
you're fairly inclined, email onair@joy.org.au.
You'll listen to Transmission Time with Jane and Lauren and Ian and Lauren on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Transmission Time on Joy 94.9. Lauren and I tonight are talking to Lauren and Ian about the groundbreaking research that they've been doing at the Prince Henry's Institute.
This is not me, that's the other Lauren, just in case you're wondering. It's not a schizophrenic thing. Do you get called And Lauren?
And Lauren?
Yeah, I get called, because it's always Jane and Lauren. For years we were Sally, Jay, and Lauren. And
so you're called And Lauren?
And Lauren, yeah. You don't get that?
No, I haven't had that
yet. You're obviously more important than I am. Okay.
Wait until you become a member of a team where there's just two of you and you'll get the...
I'll be second.
In this case, you're number one.
Oh, there you go. Now, welcome aboard, Ian. Thanks for coming.
Cheers. I know where my place is.
Now, as I understand it, this research which you've been carrying out was basically a validation test of some earlier research done in Sweden, which was a much smaller sample, as I understand it. And can you explain a little bit of the difference between the two studies?
The study in Sweden was a separate study to ours, and they only had, I think it was 29 individuals participate, and they looked at the same three genes and the same bits in the three genes, mm-hmm. and we sort of based our research loosely on what they'd done and did a similar thing, but it was slightly different, and we did find slightly different results. So they saw an association with the estrogen receptor gene, which is sort of in the same pathway but dealing with the estrogen, so whereas we found it with androgen receptor. And then this might be due to several things. It's obviously our study was much larger, so it's a little bit more, we've got a little bit more confidence in our results.
Right.
But it also may be a cultural thing and a difference between the different populations, which genetics can have as well. So obviously we'd love more studies to be carried out and with larger numbers so that we can obviously validate what we found as well. So hopefully they're sort of continuing with the research as well. I don't know exactly what they're doing now, but yeah, more individuals of course would definitely help validate this.
Is this a call for more is the study finished? Have you like shut the book, released a report, walked away?
No, not at all. The research will continue at the institute. So of course we're always wanting more participants. So I guess you just have to contact. I think Ian would probably know more. Contact Trudy Kennedy at the Gender Dysphoria.
Well, it's a bit like we were saying before that people would have to meet a certain criteria to participate. We've had a lot of support so far. If the opportunity comes up, yes, we can expand the study up to probably about 200. So we could recruit quite a few more people from within Australia. And we've also got, I know that we've got some more samples which are coming across from the States as well. But that will allow us, and one of the really important things is to replicate a study. And that gives you more power and more certainty with any genetic association study. Now, if someone was interested in that, I suppose there's really two ways they could go about that. One is they could probably contact me through Prince Henry's Institute. If they hadn't transitioned, they probably would need some form of assessment, which would be very quick and almost a tick box, and probably mm-hmm. Monash Gender Clinic and Trudy, and the secretary there, I think, is Dawn.
Yes,
could probably set up an appointment for them there.
Would you not look upstream at the flow of people coming into the trans community, people I guess identifying as cross-dresser? We've been in the community for God, quite a long time, and you see a lot of people coming through that eventually transition, but they self-identify initially with a problem, they're not quite clear what it is, and then they gradually develop a level of self-awareness, then a level of confidence, and then they move through to transition. So it would mean that there's quite a large stream upstream of these people who never quite make it into DSM-4 categorisation.
I think that's...
Or is that going to mess things up?
I think, Lon, that's quite interesting. And that's a possibility, but it's probably a separate study. You probably know the Sun tabloid newspaper in the UK, and they had a headline or a story around this, and most of it was okay, even considering it was the Sun. But they did say this was about cross-dressing, and I got quite annoyed with them. I actually dropped them a little email and said, this study does not say anything about the genetics of cross-dressers at all.
No.
But you're right that it is possibly another study, but it's not this particular study.
No, I guess once you're absolutely certain what causes it, then you could actually go upstream and see how far back it goes.
I think you're absolutely right. This is what I love about this, is that people actually seem to understand the science. People often say, well, if you try and explain the science to people, that they won't be able to understand it. It seems to me, from what I've seen online and in discussion groups and reported, especially in gay and lesbian, transgender press, that people actually have their head around what we've done and what we haven't done, what needs to be done in the future. And hopefully we're not overselling it, but we're explaining just what we've done.
I think trans people, certainly in Melbourne and in discussions with government regarding documentation changes and all those sorts of things, have been arguing the point that this is a biological condition for a long time. In other words, what they're trying to say is this is not a lifestyle choice and we're not nuts, or not any more nuts than the typical, you know, variations in the community. So this sort of thing coming along, that obviously you're not saying there is definitely a biological cause to transsexualism, but you're saying there is very likely a biological cause to transsexualism, is probably great news to the whole trans community, because that we can finally say, look, it's not a choice that we make because we just like going outside and having eggs thrown at us, and we're not any more sociopathic than, and I guess Trudy Kennedy's research backs that up, that if you pass the criteria for being a transsexual, then you don't have any other sociopathic issues like schizophrenia and all the other stuff that Jane's carrying around with her. So
Not anymore.
It is a good thing. Sorry, Jane, you're in the middle of something.
No, you're doing quite well, Lauren.
Lauren, I mean, I think that the biological evidence comes from a whole stream of different pieces of research, and we've probably not got time to go into all those other pieces of evidence, but there is evidence of family history, of twin studies, and of, I think it's the number of maternal aunts, is that right, Lauren?
Yeah, there is a maternal aunt-uncle ratio, which it's very confusing, and even I can't quite get my head around it all the time, but it's implying that there might be something along the female path in the family, so whether there's something being passed down the maternal line. So yeah, there's a lots of other research which is sort of suggested at genetic and biological basis.
It was my mother, that bitch.
there are anatomical studies which look at parts of the brain and suggest that male to female transsexuals have one little part of the brain which is more female-like than male-like. Yeah. There's also an interesting study out that says that male to female transsexuals smell sex hormones in a similar way to females rather than males. So there's a whole bunch of different pieces of biological evidence. Mm-hmm. Not all of that necessarily suggests it's genetic, but there's biological evidence from all sorts of different avenues. Mm.
You mentioned twins a moment ago. Is there any difference in what you've seen with, say, identical twins, which basically have come from the one egg, or whether there's been twins that have come from separate eggs? Is there any sort of tie-up along those lines?
I don't actually know, but as far as I know, we didn't have any twins in our study. But if there were identical twins, they're going to have the same genetic information. So there might be a higher chance of both of them being male to female transsexuals. But as I said, like, not all male to female transsexuals are going to have the long version or the short version. And if they both did, doesn't mean they both will be transsexual. Mm. If they're twins from two separate eggs, then there's still a 50% chance that they've got the same genomic or genes from their parents, because they sort of get half and half. So again, the chances are probably a little bit increased if they're identical twins, but as I say, it's not guaranteed.
So identical twins, do they have exactly the same genetic makeup or not?
Yeah, they do.
Exactly
they do.
The same.
Yeah, unless there's some sort of random event after they've separated, they'll have exactly the same genetic information.
So we have an email from Guy in Adelaide. Hi, I was raised being told I was an identical twin. I affirmed a male identity some years ago, and my sister is happily female. When I had surgery, I was told I had streak gonads, which is ovis testes. But the question is, how does genetic variation work with so-called identical twins, which I guess is what we just asked? Is it possible in relation to this gene variation, or from the female to male perspective as well? So I guess Guy, as a female to male transsexual, is saying, is it possible the androgen receptor had the same but different issue?
There could be. We didn't get to look at female to male. There have been studies which have looked at female to male and have seen associations, genetic associations.
Yeah.
I think it was published last year or
beginning. Yeah, I think we saw that. Yeah.
And it's in the similar pathway, but it is a different gene. It's the aromatase gene, which is involved in converting testosterone to estrogen. So similar sort of pathway, but different again. So, but as I said, like, there are other factors which can affect how your genes work and what your genes do. And
your genes don't define you, in other words. Your genes
No, absolutely not. I suppose if you had asked about... So back in the 1960s, people were either in one camp where they thought everything was nature, or everything was nurture. Mm-hmm. And even post-Human Genome Project, no one really sits into either camp. And almost nothing is entirely genetic, and almost nothing is entirely environmental. Looking at twins is an excellent way of getting some idea of the importance of genetics. It's obviously quite difficult to do when you're looking at transsexuals, because transsexuals, whatever we think about the prevalence figures, they're relatively rare. Identical twins are also relatively rare. Put the two of those together and you need numbers to do it. It's very, very hard to do. But if you think about some of the other conditions, and I think I'm not trying to put transsexuality into the same conditions as a disorder, for example, but if you think about what we know about genetic inheritance of things like schizophrenia, of some medical conditions, that's generally not any more than about 50%. Mm-hmm. So even in those cases where you've got identical twins, if one twin has schizophrenia, for the other one, there's only got about a 50-50 chance at most of also mm-hmm. having schizophrenia when they grow up. So there's obviously a huge environmental impact there as well. So it's almost always complicated. And I think that's what we've become comfortable as geneticists also in saying that, you know, these things are not often simple. There'll be multiple genes involved, there are multiple environmental factors. And one of the reasons of studying genetics is to get a handle. It's one of the easiest ways to actually get a handle to begin to understand some of the biology and then to look at the other processes.
Okay. Tricky, isn't it? Because if genetics don't define who you are, would you say it creates a prevalence? So someone with the longer receptor, androgen receptor gene, has the potential to become a male-to-female transsexual, but not guaranteed?
Not guaranteed, no. It may increase your chances, I guess, but it's not a definite thing. It's not going to be a predictive thing. It's not going to define whether you are or aren't. So it is, as I said, it's just a risk, I guess, a risk.
A much higher
or
risk.
Or an influencing the chances. So,
wow. Now we've got a couple more questions to ask. If we can just get a couple of commitments out the way, Jane. I can see you chomping at the bit. Transmission time with Jane and Lauren. And Ian and Lauren, see it happens on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Transmission Time on Joy 94.9. And tonight in the studio we have Lauren Hare and Ian Muchamore from the Prince Henry's Institute. And we're talking about genes and gender identity in male-to-female transsexuals. I'll imagine that you've probably had a lot of feedback from across the world on this research that you've just completed.
We definitely have, and it's been pretty positive, really. So I guess we've sort of been following sort of discussions on the internet and other groups. There's definitely other scientists and geneticists that have given us feedback, as well as, you know, the more general community. So as far as we've seen, it's mostly positive.
So you're getting a lot of emails from scientists who say, I told you so, and look, this validates my entire life. I was doing this years ago, but
there's definitely scientists who are interested in what we've done and asking whether we're doing more, and sort of asking more about general science things, whether we've tested this or looked at this, and giving us giving us ideas for what we could do next, which is exciting. So
the transgender community, how's that reacted in general?
As far as I've been able to read and sort of get my sort of information from different sources, it seems positive, which is exciting for us, because we're only doing this to try and help broaden knowledge and broaden information that's out there. So positive.
Jane, you're hooked into all of the news groups and everything else. What have you found? I haven't found anything negative.
I've seen one negative email, which was very early in the piece. They're basically saying this might all be bump, and that it's something that somebody's dreamed up and put on the internet. But there was a flurry of emails straight after that saying, no, it is all genuine, and here is the genuine press release. And after that, all the comments became very, very positive. And some of the feedback that I've seen has said, well, basically, the research that you've done is starting to validate our existence, and that it is not a lifestyle that we choose to make, it's one that we have to make. And I think that's very important to a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, as geneticists, you must come across ethical dilemma from time to time.
Always.
Do we identify? I mean, you've probably seen Gattaca. Surely that's in genetics 101. You go along and see that, and they try and emphasise the human spirit over your genetic makeup. How do you assimilate this into your work? Is it science at any cost? I need to identify everything? Or, like, if you found something you really thought wouldn't be good for society, do you still tell?
I think if you find things, of course, everyone has the freedom to know and the freedom of knowledge. So whether we found something we didn't want to find, as scientists, we deal with things of finding not what we want and what we don't want and all the time. So yeah. you have to live by the rule of you have to put it out there no matter what. And hopefully what you find isn't negative, but it's just not necessarily what you're expecting.
I think the main ethical question or the concern that people has is that somehow you could use this test or I think this went back 20 years ago when we first heard about the gay gene, and there clearly wasn't a gay gene, is that somehow you could test prenatally for this, or you could screen employees for this or whatever. There's no possible way that you could screen people or test people to predict whether they were going to be a transsexual or not using this genetic information. And even from what we know about the number of other genes that are likely to be involved, it's not going to allow you a predictive test. I just cannot see that ever technically being possible.
Okay. Even in the long term, once you've mapped the whole thing and worked out this goes with that.
Well, the number of the Gattaca scenario is based upon a technique called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So what that means is basically you take embryos and you genetically test embryos. But if you actually wanted to select, as they did in Gattaca, for a particular, I think he's got a sporting ability, hasn't he? Ethan Hawke, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. If you wanted to select for Ethan Hawke, which might be quite desirable, but if you wanted to do that, you would actually need probably hundreds or thousands of embryos to select for a particular combination of genes. And we're never going to have thousands of embryos from one particular male and female that you could then screen for to these different combinations of genes. It's just not going to happen.
Okay.
And the technology is beyond that. We can use genetic testing where we know that there's a very high heritability, there's a very high genetic element for serious genetic conditions.
Yes.
You know, where a baby is only going to live for a very short period of time. And in those cases, I mean, the genetic professionals would say, well, this is a matter for the couple to consider themselves. And yes, there is a societal element. I mean, we generally don't allow gender screening, for example. Most people are highly opposed to gender screening in different forms.
Okay. So you think ethics will still stay at arm's length?
I think you've got to constantly look at the ethics, and you've got to be aware of what new ethical issues may arise. Keeping the science to one side or not publishing the science seems actually a way in which it's more likely that the science could be misused.
Yeah.
I think if the science is out there in the public domain, people understand what it means, what it doesn't mean, we can have these discussions. And if there are appropriate regulations, and I don't think that really that this particular piece of research really requires any further sort of regulations or policy around it. It's much the same as other genetic information.
Yeah.
And we've got pretty tight rules about how you can deal with genetic information in Australia.
Okay.
Following up basically what you said, that it's going to be sort of very difficult, well, or almost impossible to screen for transsexualism, that means that basically if it's going to be impossible to basically fix the problem. Like for a lot of us, I think we'd probably rather that it had never happened to us and that we were, say, as normal male or normal female, because it'd simplify our life so much. So taking what you're saying, it's never going to be a fixable problem.
I don't think this research is trying to medicalise transsexuality. Mm. I don't think that's really where this is going at all. Well, I mean, the importance of this research is really in understanding gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us feel either male or female. And that's really what this research is about, is trying to understand what makes us feel male or female.
And it's certainly helped remove some of the social stigma associated with transsexualism. Mm.
Lauren, Ian? Thank you very much for coming in tonight, especially on a public holiday here in Melbourne, where you should have been at the races, I think. Enjoy yourself and a nice glass of wine. But thank you very much for coming in. I think people have probably found it extremely interesting.
We actually have some feedback. I won't read the exact words. Someone's SMS'd in and said, I just want to say, Joy, you effing rock. No matter what you guys do, it's all gold. Hope you won some dosh today. And don't stress about embryos. The heteros will always be making them. Thank you very much. And I hope you won something today as well. Yes, thank you very much for coming in. That's fabulous.
Thank you.
No worries,
Jane,
thank you.
We're going to leave with what hopefully is the right track from a Derek and Clive ad, is that right?
Yes, don't play the wrong one or also take us off air.
Almost certainly.
And it's the only one that you could really play on Melbourne Cup Day. It's just called Racing, and it's by Derek and Clive, a.k.a. Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Transmission time, you've been listening with Jane, Lauren and Ian on Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.